You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Welcome, everybody, to the Local Hour. Every Thursday, we talk to David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. You can follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson. Always a good follow. Top of the game when it comes to sports business insiders and insight that you don't normally get, because while there are reporters out there that do a great job, not only is David analyzing these reports, but he also has a perspective of someone that's actually been in the room where it happened. So I will lean on that experience right now, David, and discuss the latest evolution in the Deshaun Watson story and allegations. The Houston Texans were recently added to this class action lawsuit by Tony Busby, who represents the now 24 alleged victims of Deshaun Watson's harassment and alleged sexual harassment and sexual assault. According to reporting from Jenny Vrentis, David, the Houston Texans, and that's why the reason they find themselves in this lawsuit, allegedly set up some of these appointments with these massage therapists for Deshaun Watson, and in some cases provided non-disclosure agreements. I haven't seen the Texans statement just yet. I'm hoping you can fill me and the audience in on that. I'm sure they probably toe a company line that this is not out of the ordinary. It doesn't seem like it's something that teams should be doing, but I'm very curious to hear your perspective on this, David.
So let's start with an NDA. An NDA is a non-disclosure agreement, which says that I'm going to learn something about you, but I promise that whatever I learn, I'm not going to tell anybody else. And so people are generally asked to sign that when you go into a show and you are hearing a comedy bit for the first time that someone's working on before they're doing a big Netflix show, let's say. You'd sign an NDA saying, I'm not going to record, I'm going to give you my phone, and I'm not going to tell anybody any of the jokes I heard here. Or when you have an agreement, even a divorce agreement, there could be a non-disclosure agreement where you sign, I will not tell anybody how much I got from you or how much I gave to you. Or when you rent an apartment, whether it's in Miami or New York City, sometimes your landlord will have you sign a non-disclosure agreement. Don't tell anyone the amount of rent I'm charging because I don't want your neighbors to know that you got a good deal. Wink, wink. Or I don't want you to realize that you got such a bad deal. Either way, an NDA is meant so that information is not disseminated outside of the people who are part of that non-disclosure agreement. In all of my years, Mike, I have never asked a player to sign an NDA or been asked by a player to draft an NDA so that player could go out gallivanting or getting massages or doing whatever it is that Deshaun Watson was doing. So it's fascinating for me to think that maybe the Houston Texans were either asked by Deshaun Watson, hey, I'm doing these massages where there's happy endings galore and I'd rather nobody talk about it. I need a lawyer to write an NDA. Is that possible? I guess my answer, Mike, is that it was the director of security who provided the NDA to Deshaun Watson to give to these women. And our director of security would not have done one thing without coming to me or coming to Larry or Mike before doing something like that. So I find it that to be unreasonable as well, that it was just the director of security. So all of it is very strange. And if it means that the Texans were complicit in Watson's behavior, that means there could be liability, which means there could be money from those deep pockets. And that's why the Texans were added to the lawsuit.
So just based off of your experience, a rogue director of security armed with pre-approved non-disclosure agreements, just leaning on your personal experience with the Marlins when you were running a team, that seems a little far-fetched that the Texans wouldn't have direct knowledge of something like this being authorized?
It's a 100% certainty that that's not the case. There is no chance that a rogue head of security somehow, without talking to any lawyers, wrote his own or her own or their own non-disclosure agreement and had a thing with Deshaun Watson where he said, I got you covered. I've got your NDA. It's so preposterous that I laughed. If it weren't such a serious issue, it would be humorous.
But it's possible the Texans could claim that they didn't know what it was for. Is that right? Like they maybe weren't aware of the massage therapist aspect of it, and maybe they just gave him a blanket NDA. Like I'm trying to think from their point of view why he would need one and why they would just give it to him.
And to piggyback on what Jess is asking, there are Deshaun Watson's a franchise quarterback and there are different rules for different players. And I think the only comp that you had was Jose Fernandez in terms of superstars on your roster. Well, you had Giancarlo Stanton too. If you were approached by a top marquee player, the way that Jess just said, is it one of those things that you're more inclined to perhaps move on?
So we did a lot of favors and we had a lot of superstars over the year, whether it was Ichiro, whether it was even Bonds as a coach or going back to Pudge Rodriguez. I mean, just the list goes on and on. It's sad to say how long the list is of superstars we had with only one ring to show. So thank you for bringing that up. But we would definitely make accommodations for superstars, but not including NDAs. And I saw everything over the years. I saw plenty of players doing plenty of things that they would want plenty of people to not know about. That is standard operating procedure in professional sports, if not professional life. But an NDA, by definition, means there's something going on here more than adultery. There's something going on here that requires a level of privacy that means there is something nefarious happening. And I would not have been a part of that because I wouldn't have wanted to open Jeffrey up to any liability in any way as the owner of the team. So I was never approached to be complicit in anything like that. But it wouldn't go on behind my back either because anyone who worked for me would have known better than to participate. Because like the general counsel would have to be involved in drafting an NDA. It's not like the head of security has it in Windows Docs or whatever, Word Doc or whatever they call it. That doesn't exist. You have to have in an NDA something specific. Who are the parties? What are you asking for? And what's the punishment if you violate it? So it's actually a full legal document.
Let's talk about the newest party in this lawsuit, the Houston Texans, and how they might react to something like this and how the NFL might react to it. So far, in the wake of this scandal, Deshaun Watson's been rewarded with the richest guaranteed contract at the position in NFL history, and the Houston Texans got a certified haul for that player in trading him, a player that is subject to suspension. Everyone assumes there will be some sort of suspension here. Are the Houston Texans, in your mind, now subject to disciplinary action? Is there anything that you think might be able to happen to the transaction with Deshaun Watson going forward, depending on more evolutions to this story?
So when a transaction gets unwound by a commissioner, that's normally because there's information that was not available to the acquiring team and that the team that's doing the acquiring basically acquired. It's like a the legal term is when you make a deal. This is, I'm putting this in a non-legal way. When you buy something and you say, well, that's not what I thought I was buying. You lied to me about what that was. This house is made of paper. Well, now I'm going to reverse that transaction. Similar to what happened with the Colin Ray transaction with the Marlins when we were able to reverse that because he came without an elbow and we were told through his medical records that his elbow was fine. If the Browns want to say, hey, you guys in Houston, you knew that he was doing this with not 22 women, but with 28 women and 66 women and 74 women. You knew that. And if we had known that, we would not have made this trade, period. Then they can go to the commissioner and say, please unwind the trade. It would be the Browns who would want to unwind it, not the Texans.
I'm curious to know your input and Jess, your input on this too. Having not known what's going on behind the scenes, I'm not in the room where these depositions are happening. It kind of feels like the Times report came out and immediately, and this is to all casual observers of this story, immediately thereafter, the Texans are added to this lawsuit. Do you think the Times discovered some stuff that led to this decision by Tony Busby to add the Texans to it, or this is just all coincidental timing?
it's not coincidental. It's Tony Busby, who's just getting more attention by adding the Texans. And it adds a level of gravitas to the proceedings because now the NFL has to truly pay attention even more because one of its member franchises is named in a suit. But that deposition, those are made available to both parties. So Busby was very aware of anything that was said in the deposition long before the New York Times reported on it.
Were you surprised at all with Rusty Hardin's radio interview about it's not illegal to give or receive happy endings or whatever it was that happened a week before? And then also, it seems like Deshaun's defense team was surprised by the 24th accuser coming forward, and they didn't really have a reaction to that publicly. Were you surprised at all by him even doing radio interviews in the first place?
I think they probably thought they had the 24th woman under control, and that there was some sort of settlement, some sort of payment, and that there was no deal that was had. And then she went public. Because if Deshaun Watson is not telling his lawyers the truth about the number of women or where the women are or how to find them, then he is doing his own wallet a disservice. Because he's not being indicted by grand juries, but he is definitely civilly liable. And the more women who come out, a judge gets to say, wow, this is a pattern of behavior. And this is now culpable, right? This equals dollars. And the general rule for lawyers, we never let our lawyers, and we were involved in so many lawsuits over the years, we really did not let them speak to the press very often. And when they did, it was pre-planned. It was in statement form. We knew exactly what was going to be said. We never had a lawyer who then had to backtrack and apologize the way Rusty Hardin did. I mean, he had climbed all over himself to say, oh, I didn't say happy endings were legal, and I didn't say that it had anything to do with Deshaun Watson. Keep in mind that any sex that went on was post-massage and totally consensual. So I kept picturing, like, in the massage, Deshaun Watson or Robert Kraft, they finished the massage. They're like, oh, that feels good. The 45 minutes is up. Let's end this session. And now, question, may I turn over? Right? Like, it's not a continual event. It's just so laughable to me. And Rusty Hardin had to catch himself and try to rehabilitate himself faster than Jack Del Rio did. And I don't think it worked because the judge and any jury has seen, heard this, and it's going to be very difficult to be partial now. So it's going to be interesting. I still think this settles. There's no way Watson goes to trial with all these women. No way.
Well, we'll get to Jack Del Rio in a second, I think. But last question for me. Like, you've been around sports for a very long time. Are you familiar with any athletes that you've worked with that used over 60 massage therapists in the span of 2 years? Is that something that you've seen from athletes?
No, that number is way too high, right? So there are definitely athletes who get massages. There's definitely executives who get massages. There's owners who get massages. Everybody gets massages. That's why they're on every street corner. So it's one of those supply-demand things. But that number seems a little excessive. And I think Deshaun Watson trying to cover it up by saying it was, a sports massage. You know, you don't really, we would not allow our players to go to an unlicensed therapist when they're looking for a sports massage. If they're looking for a different kind of massage, a different kind of license would be necessary. But to claim that it is for his, his physical well-being, well, I would say it was probably more for his mental well-being.
Right. I just don't understand setting up massage therapy sessions for your franchise quarterback without an agreed to party. I mean, the Texans obviously provide massage therapy to their players. They have a training staff on site to be able to outsource this without any sort of vetting. It just, all of it seems very odd, David. But we'll transition now to the Jack Del Rio story. Thank you for the Vine. Jack Del Rio had to issue a statement that was in quote, I don't know if you caught the detail of the statement that he put out, what he quoted himself. So he just copy pasted or screen capped whatever was sent. Hey,
you
Jack, say something like this.
You took my word of the day from today's Nothing Personal, which is copy paste.
Yeah. Well, is that one word?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What Jack slash. Del Rio did.
It seems like two words. Is that two words?
Three words. I mean,
copy slash paste.
How about screen capped? Screen capped is one word.
Hyphenate.
Yeah, so Jack Del Rio, I mean, I think anybody who paid it, no one is surprised Jack Del Rio was MAGA. No one. No one is surprised by this. His Twitter behavior was well known, but now it's the Washington Commanders' problem. They got a lot of problems. They've got another one. And frankly, relative to all the other problems, this one's a walk in the park, which is, I think, how Jack Del Rio might have described the insurrection on January 6th. So Jack Del Rio, he has to answer for old tweets does kind of a piss poor job of defending himself and tries to change the subject to, we're really excited about what we got here going on with the Washington Commanders. And then screen caps a statement that's in quotation marks that was written out for him. Your take on the Jack Del Rio story, would you even, given what was known about Jack Del Rio, it seemed like a weird hire. Number one, would you have authorized the hire if you're a head coach? And they've entrusted Ron Rivera with a lot over there for the Commanders. Would you have allowed this hire? And how would you have handled the spin to the old tweets being rediscovered?
Boy, I've allowed a lot of crappy hires in the name of managers saying, I've got to have this guy, right? Whether it was Gary Tuck, whether it was Barry Bonds, whether it was Bobby Meacham, whether it was Dan Jennings, bench coach, whose name I don't even know. I can't even remember the bench coach when Dan Jennings, we asked him to manage. He said, I'll only do it with this guy. And that guy turned out to be one of the absolute worst of all time. So the answer is yes, I've allowed hires, but I've done it without sort of political slants. So the hires that I've allowed are from people who said, if I don't have this guy, then I can't move forward. And I would just swallow hard and be okay with it and cross my fingers and hope it would work out. You're asking me a more detailed question, which is, if you know someone has different political beliefs than you do, do you hire that person? And the answer is yes, because I'm having a talk with that person. I have no problem with people having different political beliefs than I happen to have. And frankly, those political beliefs may be closer to what the owner has, which would make the owner more comfortable. But the reality is, if people can do their job, I want them to do their job. But in this day and age, we are certainly speaking to those hires and explaining there are certain subjects that we don't want you to cover. And I don't want to go so far as to say shut up and throw batting practice, but it's pretty close to that, which is please don't talk about issues that you don't fully understand.
Yeah, well, I still interact with plenty and have several conservative friends. And the one common ground that I think we found in all of that was January 6th was bad, thankfully. Although conservatism nowadays, you have to kind of be all in on the concept. The whataboutism, I don't understand when it comes to January 6th that Jack Del Rio continued to do. There is no whatabout when it comes to January 6th. There is no comp for it. Not protests during George Floyd. There is never in American history outside of the American Revolution where people tried to totally sidetrack the American democratic process and they invaded in an attempt to decertify election results. They invaded a government building. So there is no what about here, David.
Here's why he has a problem, because as you know, this week it starts the hearings, the January 6th hearings, which are in prime time, which are going to be shown live. And we're going to learn as a country what exactly went on behind the red curtain, the iron curtain, the Trump curtain. And the scary part is we're probably not going to learn everything that happened, but enough to know that we're going to get confirmation that all of the stuff that happens behind our backs is significant. And Jack Del Rio just is in the wrong place at the wrong time on this issue, which is why he pivoted to, hey, I have my views, you have your views, but I love you, you love me, and aren't we all jolly? And that works in general when you do something wrong, there's a fly ball to left field and it's 4-0 Reds, right? So that can work, but when it comes to January 6th, you cannot do that. And that's why Del Rio first doubled down, then had an apology that was written by the Commander's lawyers and PR people. But this issue is not going to go away for him. And it's going to be interesting what Ron Rivera does, because if Ron Rivera and Jason Wright do want to clean up the Commanskins, which they keep saying they want to, then you just have to have zero tolerance for that type of distraction. And that's what Jack Del Rio has become now, is another distraction.
But they kind of had to in this situation, right? Because Jack Del Rio is leading a majority group of black men. And when you're comparing buildings being burnt from the George Floyd protest to the insurrection, like, it's not a fair comparison. Like, when you're leading a group of black men in this situation, like, I think you got to clean that up. I think he has to go.
So it's interesting because they went to some of his players and they were asked about it. And the Commanders had gotten to those players first and given them what to say, because their responses were, listen, I may or may not agree, but I'm only interested in his ability to be our defensive coordinator. I just want to make sure that we can be the best team we can be, right? They gave the normal talking points. But if you had one player say, listen, I'm not comfortable with what he's saying, that is not a comparison that I would make. I think then the Commanders would be backed into a corner, but they got to their players faster than the media did.
Was the bench coach with Dan Jennings Mike Goff?
Yes. Oh my God, I haven't heard that name in so long. He was so hated and so bad. And I've always wanted to know from Dan what it was. And I came to know that he was so nervous going from GM to manager. And he was so nervous that the players would not respect him because of the line between the front office and the field, but also worried that he wouldn't, that the game would be too fast and he wouldn't really be good at it. So he wanted his friend with him who knew sort of the X's and O's, but he had zero credibility on the bench. And we just said yes, because we were so desperate sitting at the Beverly Hills Hilton asking him to manage. So desperate that we said yes, and it was... Oh my God, it was so bad. We couldn't wait to get rid of Goff. Literally couldn't wait.
David, you, I think even you would admit that your tenure with the Marlins was a bit odd, often odd at times. The Dan Jennings era of your ownership groups and your team presidency, that's got to be top five strangest decisions you guys have ever made.
Well, let me give you the background, because I think if you understand why I made the decision, you may like it better.
Who finished second to the Dan Jennings
was
solution?
It you?
Was he like PJ Loiello, your media relations director? Like all of the, like who was in the running for this job where you guys decided we'll put Dan Jennings in there?
So you have to know where we were in history. Where we were is we had gone through managers the way some people go through socks, right? They just were coming and going. And Jeffrey was so upset with all the managers because he had unrealistic expectations about the team, or the team was just underperforming given the names that we had and we couldn't win 81 games. So I got together with Mike Hill, who was the president of baseball operations at the time, and we had to identify a manager for Jeffrey because he wanted to do an in-season firing. And we said, what are we going to do here? Because whoever we bring in is just going to get fired by Jeffrey. So why don't, wait a minute, we've got it. His go-to guy is Dan Jennings. He, everything Dan says, Jeffrey agrees with. Jeffrey calls us on the phone to say, hey, let's trade for Joe Cocktoasten. And we'll say, Joe Cocktoasten, how do you know who that is? And he'll say, oh, I read about him or I heard about him. And we know very well Dan Jennings wanted to trade for Cocktoasten. Call Jeffrey about it. Jeffrey called us like it was his idea. And we had to go back to Dan and say, Dan, could you please come to us with these ideas before you go to Jeffrey? Because you may just be talking to him at 2 a.m, but Jeffrey holds onto it like a tiger to meat. So we said, but he loves Dan so much. He hates managers, second guesses them so much. If we make Dan the manager, one of two things are going to happen. He's either going to stop bitching and moaning to us after every blown save and after every loss, and because it'll be his guy, Dan, that he can talk to. Or he's going to be so angry with Dan as manager that Dan will get fired and that'll be the end of Dan. So either way, there's going to be an outcome that's going to be positive in terms of how this front office works. And it was the latter. I wish it had been the former, because I wish Dan would have worked out. But after about 2 weeks, Jeffrey was so angry with Dan as manager that we knew that was the end.
I'm going to play the role of an emotional Marlins fan hearing you tell this story. It seemed as though, from your telling of this story, that you put your own workplace environment ahead of the team's on-field success just because you had a Dan Jennings, Jeffrey Loiello problem. And you realize, oh, two birds, one stone here. It wasn't the best guy for the job, the way that you tell that story. So how would you rebuff the emotional Marlins fan argument, hearing that, processing that?
I'm not convinced that Rob Thompson's a better manager than Joe Girardi, right? So I'm not willing to tell you that Joe Maddon deserved to be fired because the Angels lost 12 in a row. Right, because they didn't like his voice anymore. That's what front offices say when they want to make a change. We need a new voice. We need a disciplinarian. We had a jokester, or we need a jokester because we had a disciplinarian. I am not willing to acknowledge that putting Dan Jennings in as manager was putting up a white flag. We had a team that should have won more games than it did with you as manager. And you could have managed that team and it should have done better. So I'm not exactly sure what happened with Stanton and Yelich and Ozuna and JT and all the players we had, Ichiro back in those days, all the players we had who were good enough to win together and just didn't. So I don't say that we put on field winning behind front office calmness, but if we can get both done at once, that's what we would do.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed. Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
I haven't told you guys that on my honeymoon in Africa, the hot air balloon caught fire.
What?
Stugats.
There are animals beneath you.
Jesus.
Animals that can eat you. And I look up and the balloon itself has a hole that is growing because it is on fire. And the guy seemed like it wasn't the scariest thing
in the
world.
Key. It's like looking at the flight attendant, making sure if they're not panicked, you're good.
And they were not panicked, but we absolutely did crash land near some dung. But the basket ended up sideways, just sort of spilling us out into the African plain. Yes. The basket's supposed to land flat. It did not land flat. It landed and then went to its side and spit us out. And my head ended up near some fresh animal dung of some sort.
When does poop graduate to dung?
When you're in the African plain.
This is the Don Lebatar Show with the Stugats.
Represented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Let me get your read on the Joe Maddon move, because I was surprised. Joe Maddon is a titan of the sport, and he was replaced by Phil Nevin, who had been rumored for jobs previously. Man, we're getting old when Phil Nevin is a manager. I'll just say that. But now he has turned it around. He kept a pitcher in. He pounded him on his chest. A vote of confidence. They got out of a jam, and they're turning to Nickelback, and they're winning now. It seems like a weird move. Also, in yesterday's show, we made the point that none of this ever lands on Trout. It's hard to land on a player that's excellent, but the Angels are probably the greatest underachieving franchise of the last 5 years, David. Joe Maddon the problem there?
I'm sorry, but I'm just confused. The Angels have lost 14 in a row.
They didn't win. I think that they didn't win one with Nickelback?
No.
Damn, I read the internet wrong. I'll pay $5. So Phil Nevin did not fix it.
No, there's nothing fixed at all.
I was pulling for Phil Nevin.
Do you want to restart that whole segment?
No. I don't mind showing my ass on baseball. I don't really watch pro baseball. I did have the Brewers last night, and that was not good.
Because I thought, first of all, you don't fire a manager when you're about to play the hottest team in baseball. It's the worst plan ever. You do what the Marlins did, which is you have a team meeting when you're playing the Nationals. You don't fire your manager and then play the Red Sox, and they've lost two in a row to the Red Sox. Now we're three in a row. They've lost 14 in a row overall, depending on when you release this. But Phil Nevin is just a different type of guy than Joe Maddon. But what's funny is Perry Manassian, who's the GM, is taking the heat for this from Artie Moreno. But everyone in the game knows that it was Artie Moreno who made this decision, not Perry. Because Perry, I've done this so many times, yeah, we called Jeffrey with this idea to make this managerial change. But no, it was Jeffrey calling us to say you're making this managerial change. And that's what happened in Anaheim as well, with Artie Moreno saying, I've had enough. We're not going to take this losing. We were in first place, the talk of baseball, and now we're below 500 and not going to make the playoffs. And that's exactly where they're going to end, is below 500 and not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm just learning this right now. Boston 1, Angels of Anaheim 0. That's a tough blow for Phil Nevin. Let's talk about ownership in the NFL. The Denver Broncos are selling for $4.5 billion. And I kind of had a take that I got some blowback from, and people were right to point out that the Denver Broncos were operated by a trust, and therefore the trust has a fiduciary duty to sell to the highest bidder. I understand what people are saying when they say that. The game was also rigged for the ownership group. Because there's Stane Kroenke ties to the Walton family. I do know from some reporting that people that were involved with the Broncos ownership chase felt like it wasn't a fair fight, and that the groundwork was laid much earlier for the Walton family to get this. So if the NFL, despite the Broncos being operated by a family trust, if the NFL wanted an ownership group to be the winner of this bidding process, that ownership group is indeed winning the bidding process, is it not, David?
Yeah, let me be clear. Roger Goodell has two priorities. The first priority is to make sure that his teams are profitable on an annual basis. The second priority, which he would put number one because owners have it as number one, is increasing the asset valuation of his teams. Make no mistake, Roger Goodell can tell you all day long, I care about minorities and have their things on the helmets and things in the end zone, and we want a minority owner. We want black ownership representation inside the room. He doesn't give a flying rat's ass about that. If you've got a person who's white, purple, brown, black, or pink, and they outbid anybody else, that person's going to get it. And Bill Walton, I just called him Bill Walton. It's definitely not Bill Walton. It is.
Is Robert Walton? Is it Robert? It's Robert.
Bob Walton.
Bob Walton.
Bill Walton is the NBA player who the audience probably doesn't know who that is, but was a great NBA player who's a funny guy who was getting stoned way before Chappelle was. And so Walton was going to outbid anybody and told Roger Goodell that, and they jacked up the price. The Denver Broncos on an operating basis are not worth $4.65 billion. The ego premium and the getting into the room where it happens premium is so high on these franchises now that the sky's the limit. And so commissioners are looking for the richest people possible to write the checks because they don't want huge ownership groups, but they want the cost of the franchises to keep going up, which is why there are fewer and fewer people who are eligible to buy these franchises, which is why you see the same names over and over again bidding for all the different franchises. It's a very small group, and that is not going to change. It's not going to change color. It's not going to change opportunity until you've got more billionaire people of color. And I don't mean 1 billion. I'm talking like 20 plus. And until that happens, Roger Goodell is not going to have a minority in as a majority owner because they won't be able to pay enough money.
It does appear now, though, that you're going to have a person of color in your ownership group represented. Melody Hobson, George Lucas's wife, was part of this ownership group. What do you make of the Kroenke connection here? How odd is this that there is a family relation? Stane Kroenke's wife is from the Walton family. That obviously helps, and it certainly means approval by the owners is certainly going to happen. Is this uncommon within sports? Does this open up any sort of can of worms?
But that only means one vote, right? And you say it helps. What if it were Danny Snyder's sister-in-law?
Right, but from what from reporting in the NFL, Stane Kroenke does have a lot of power amongst owners. But
he still has one vote, but he's popular. Yeah. So what we're really talking about is a high school popularity prom contest,
right? It helps. It's a political game, especially in the game of where you need 32 votes.
Yeah, Walton's not. You don't need 34. You don't need all 32.
Yeah.
Right, you need 24. So it really is okay if you have some people who don't like you or don't want you. Like, the reason Mark Cuban doesn't own a baseball team is not because one person didn't want him in. It's because eight people didn't want him in, so he was not going to get the votes to get a team. So that's why he never bid for a team. And we told him that up front, like, you don't have the votes, period. Like Jeff Morad, when he almost bought a team, the Padres, as you may recall, back in the day as an agent, He didn't have the votes, but we kept it secret from him until the owners meeting. And then he found out, like, in front of all the other owners that his vote was turned down. And that was a funny moment when Jeff was turned down that way. But so there are different ways you turn down owners. But for me, it's when you've got a minority in an ownership group, it almost becomes, and I'm sorry to offend anyone, and I don't want to, it's a check the box now. Right? When you are finding George Lucas's wife and putting her in, or the Dodgers had Magic Johnson, or the Boston Red Sox got to announce LeBron James is now an owner in Fenway Sports Group, it's not because LeBron James is coming in with his millions or now up to $1 billion. It's because they think it's a good look for their ownership group to have that representation. And there's a fine line, right? Mike Hill used to talk about this, Mike, and it's a sensitive subject, but it's about the Selig rule and the Rooney rule. He didn't want to be hired because he was black and because he got a chance because he was black. He wanted to be hired because he was the best president of baseball operations out there. And so there's actually a sensitivity about the Selig rule with some black executives that is not talked about a lot.
Well, I guess the counter to that is these rules give you the opportunity to have a level playing field where you can, or allegedly a level playing field, where you can show that you're the best possible candidate, whereas the door might not even be open to you.
So that is why there's programs in place in the NFL and in Major League Baseball at lower levels to try to get people in at younger ages to have them go up the chain. But at the end of the day, what you're looking for when you're hiring executives, which is why these rules don't work, is you're looking for the best chance to win. But when it comes to ownership, that can be much more manipulated when the price of the franchises was lower and there were more groups of people who could possibly become owners. But with the prices where they are, the pool of owners has gotten smaller, and that has had the opposite impact that people would want in terms of color in ownership.
Let's transition to movies. Every week you review either a film or a television series, something from the world of entertainment. What is your review for this week, David?
I watched Hustle yesterday. It just came out, the Adam Sandler Netflix movie that is produced by LeBron James and Maverick Carter. It is about a scout. He plays a scout married to Queen Latifah, and he plays a scout who has to discover a player because Robert Duvall, who I love as an actor, appears in the movie. When I saw his name, I couldn't believe he was acting again. I was so happy because I assumed he was like Gene Hackman. You know, I thought he was still alive, but figured he could be in his late 80s, early 90s. And so, oh my God, he's acting again. He was in two scenes, and it felt like Bernie a little bit from Weekend at Bernie's. But how old is he, Mike? I know you're looking right now.
I'll get you a number on
it's gotta Robert Duvall. It's an 8 handle for sure, right?
Yeah,
I'm
he's got to be
it's past 85.
91. Wow,
oh
91.
My God. That may be exactly Gene Hackman's age then.
Yeah. Or viewed as a youth movement when it comes to NFL ownership.
So he plays the owner of a team, the Philadelphia 76ers, and he dies. Spoiler alert, he dies, and Ben Foster, his mean son, takes over, and the scout played by Sam.
Ooh, I like Ben Foster. Can I stop you right there? What's your favorite Ben Foster role?
Have I seen him in other movies?
Ben Foster? Yeah, you've definitely seen Ben Foster in other movies. Ben Foster is he married to Robin Wright Penn? Well, otherwise she'd be Robin Wright Foster, right?
If that's true, that would be amazing. I wasn't aware of
Ben
that.
Foster, I think he was in Hostage, a great Bruce Willis movie that I highly recommend people watch. But he was in, what was that movie with Chris Pine? God damn it. Hell or High Water. That movie rocked.
Oh, he was in that.
He was amazing in that.
Yeah, he looks so different in this movie.
He's a great actor.
Smaller. But in any case, the movie itself is just full of cameos. It's an after-school special at best. And it is, unfortunately, a movie that if you don't love the NBA and want to see a bunch of players try to act like Mark Jackson and other people try to have cameos, it's so silly. The story is so worn, right? We've seen the story a million times. The scout goes out and he finds a jewel in the rough that no one else has found, and he coaches him in Philadelphia with Rocky music, and he gets to the top of the mountain and he starts fighting like Rocky, you know, punching the air. It's so trite. that I had a hard time getting through it. But the best part of the movie, if you do get through it, is when the credits roll, there's a featuring and it goes through all of the cameos and you miss like 50% of them because they're so fast and you get to see who was in it. But I guess LeBron just went into his cell phone and said, hey, do you want to be in a Netflix movie because I'm producing it? But Adam Sandler, you know, we talked about this on a recent show. I'm so disappointed in his choices. And this is another example of a terrible choice.
So Robin Wright is not married to Ben Foster. Ben Foster is married to Laura Prepon from That 70s Show. But the two dated for a very long time, Ben Foster and Robin Wright. And in an issue of Us magazine, Robin Wright spilled on her sex life with Ben Foster, saying, I've never been happier in my life than I am today. Hubba hubba.
I bet Sean Penn may want to kick his ass now, right?
Sean Penn has a tendency to do that.
Right.
Not a big Sean Penn guy. I don't know if you've heard.
You have to be a big fan of him as a movie star, though, right?
Man, it's hard to separate the art from the artist. He kind of, every time I see him in a movie now, well, yeah, the Tom Cruise I separated. Adnan, God. Adnan is he can't do it. But I will say that after I watched Top Gun Maverick, I did check my thetan levels just because I was curious. I mean, he's doing good work by taking a more reduced role in terms of visibility within the science. I'm not going to get into Scientology. But
are you not willing to acknowledge that Sean Penn is one of the best actors of our lifetime?
I can acknowledge that.
Okay, all I wanted you to acknowledge.
I can acknowledge that.
He's a little off.
A little off. I don't know if you call his hit on Hannity the other day, but he's a lot off. Sometimes he's on the right side of history, and sometimes he's hugely offensive with his political stances, and sometimes he's alleged of doing terrible things and then suing people that just report on the terrible things that he might or might not have gotten away with in his past. Not a big Sean Penn guy. And every time I see him on screen, I get kind of like a visceral reaction, and I don't have that with Tom Cruise. I think they're different things.
Don't you realize why actors do this? It's been going on since like the days of Barbara Streisand, right? Where actors have sort of their political views and they start using their platforms to spout their political views, which are normally left-leaning. It's because we build up actors and athletes so much in their own professions that they have this feeling that they can do something else, talk about something else, or know about something else because we feed that ego as fans of these players or of these actors. And it's hard when you're being told that you're the greatest to think that there's a limit to that greatness. And so therefore you try to have it translate into all these areas that actually you don't know anything about. The equivalent is if an actor decided, you know what, thanks, I'm gonna now fly planes, right? I'm John Travolta, I'm Tom Cruise, I'm a pilot. It's so bizarre to me, but Sean Penn is a victim of that, where he needed an outlet for his ego and he chose politics.
Oh, thank you. I haven't really thought about it that way. I kind of feel bad that I'm getting called out for making a musical now. Says a lot about my ego, I guess. Licorice Pizza was a really great movie. I love that movie. I love that filmmaker. But Sean Penn was in it, and I was kind of frustrated because I did enjoy his part in it. I thought he was very good in it, but when he first appeared on screen, I knew that he was in the film. I'd seen the trailer. I was like, damn. But he's still very good.
Recoil when you see him in
the
movie?
Yeah.
Like literally recoil.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like Sean Penn. I did like I Am Sam. I do like a lot of films that Sean Penn has done. I do like Dazed and Confused. But I don't like Sean Penn. So it's hard for me to separate it specifically with him. And David, honestly, I think this is just like the Cuban upbringing in me. Like, the way that he cozied up to socialists, that cozied up to the Castro regime, I guess that's just a bridge too far for me. If you're looking to like cherry pick hypocritical instances of my social and political beliefs, that's probably one. It's just a raw area of mine that Sean Penn just tends to gnaw at.
So think of the calculus that he does, right? Because when he decides to take the stances that he takes, he also has to work with his agent and his accountant and see whether or not what the impact will be to his lifestyle. And if he is told, listen, by what you're doing, there's a bunch of Cuban Americans and they're not going to like what you're doing. He will then be told that represents 0.0002 of your domestic box office. And in terms of studio strength and their ability to give you guarantees, it's a 0.0001. So proceed. But on the other hand, if you do something that offends 48% of your audience, that will have a more deleterious impact. So I'm sorry to tell you, Mike, that your protestations were not even a factor in his decision-making process.
Oh, I know. I'm just a man with a microphone sharing my personal beliefs. I am but a drop in a bucket. And the only time my my subset of Latinos actually matters is oddly swinging really important elections.
Elections.
It's really weird.
That's it.
I don't know if you've seen what's going on with Radio Mom B, but there is just a battle between the left and the right down here. Radio Mom B, this is the local hour, and this isn't because Miami. I'm sure Billy Corbin covered the Radio Mom B stuff?
Yeah, he did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so Radio Mom B has been taken over by a left-leaning ownership group, and there are ties to George Soros, which I know is a huge tag on Breitbart. But Radio Mom B, for ages upon ages down here, was a very right-leaning conservative propaganda weapon of the Republican Party down here. It fortified the beliefs of paranoid political exiles. Not to excuse them, I'm just here trying to explain the behavior. Scarred by their own political experiences in life. And it just reinforced that. And towards the latter years of its existence under the previous ownership group, got more and more radicalized, more and more out there, more and more false claims, like anything in politics lately. And now it's been taken over by the left. And I imagine it's going to be tried to be used as a propaganda arm for the left. But it is a very interesting culture war that has played out through the nation. And specifically when people are trying to win swing states like the state of Florida, this is some semblance that the Democrats are no longer ready to punt on South Florida and just count on the Puerto Ricans in Orlando. They're trying to fight the battle here in Miami-Dade and win back some votes, and that's by taking away one of the big propaganda weapons.
Well, it's too little too late, right? They were ignored for so long because there was no question where Florida was, and then all of a sudden it became red because the Republicans did such a better job of getting the Latino vote, right, by talking about socialism, by using keywords and comparisons, which is the third rail word to use if you want to get someone not to vote. He's a socialist. Oh, my God, I can't vote for him. What about all the other issues? Don't care. One issue voters, right? And so then the left said, well, wait a minute, we've been screwing this up so badly that we're losing elections over it. Let's do something. So they say, how about an idea? Let's just buy the radio station, which means we'll buy their silence, which means that all of a sudden, all of the big words that are being used by the right side won't be heard over the airwaves, which is how people are making their decisions. But they're so late to the party because the majority of voters are younger now. So it's totally changed. It's like asking you, Mike, your parents and grandparents were way more influenced by radio than you are, right? Not even close. Do you agree?
Yeah, but I do find it curious that a lot of young Cuban third generation Americans were the generation in between was starting to vote a little bit more left-leaning. The beliefs have been fortified from the previous older generation. Like those political values have been instilled in a younger generation. Now younger Cuban Americans based out of Miami are leaning conservative.
But the radio change in ownership is not going to change that.
No,
that
and it's an insane amount of money to spend on AM radio. But it's just a political weapon that they're being used. And honestly, I'm a little confused why conservatives like and conservative outlets like Breitbart all of a sudden against free market capitalism. But, you know, that's a game we play.
I thought of this transaction as Paul Lynde to block from the old Hollywood Squares. Right. That's all. This was not going to help you win the game, but it was going to stop someone else from taking advantage of the board.
I'm going to take Bruce Valanche. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.